So this is the midget submarine that was launched by I-24. The I-24 was the submarine that, one of the submarines off of Pearl Harbor, but I-24 is notable for a couple of reasons. First of all, their midget submarine survived. It grounded at Bellows Beach on Oahu. It was the only one that wasn't sunk during the attack. And the second reason is that I-24 was the submarine that Machisuro Hashimoto was aboard, who later, of course, was the submarine commander that sunk the Indianapolis. Hashimoto was the torpedo officer on the I-24 when they launched this midget submarine. You can see that this was the submarines that were launched at Pearl Harbor were notable because they had this figure eight pattern. This is a net cutter. They expected to have to cut through nets on the entrance of Pearl Harbor. What they generally did, though, is they snuck under the nets as they went into Pearl. So this was the net cutter. Each of these midget submarines had two torpedoes here. You see one, two. This is actually a pressure coating that covered the torpedo, which would have been inside. The torpedo would be ejected out pneumatically with air, and it would bust through these covers. I-24 was recovered with the torpedoes when it grounded. It hadn't had a chance to launch the torpedoes before it grounded. So the skipper of this midget submarine was an ensign. He actually survived the grounding. He had a warrant officer, crew member, with him who died sometime around the time that the ship grounded, probably from breathing the noxious gases that were created by the batteries inside the submarine. So this distinctive figure eight pattern was unique to the midget submarines that were used for the attack on Pearl Harbor. There was later a submarine found on the bottom of the sea off of Pearl Harbor. It had this distinctive figure eight pattern. That's how they knew it was one of those submarines that was launched during the attack on Pearl Harbor. But the net cutter was such that, you know, this in theory would have been very sharp at the time. Obviously it's dulled now. But if indeed it had a net, the net would ride up this long line and over the top of the sail. And that's how the submarine would keep from being trapped in the net, is that the net would ride that line up and over the top of the sail there. That's how it was supposed to work, and we don't really know whether it did. Okay, unlike the Kaiten, or human torpedoes, which were designed for suicide, these were not actually designed for suicide. The whole theory of these was they would come back and they would be remated with the mother submarines. The mother submarines would have to surface in order for the crew to climb out and then in through the hatch that's at the top of the sail there. That's how these were launched. They weren't launched, and they didn't climb in from inside the submarine like the Kaiten did. So the mother submarine surfaces, in this case at Pearl Harbor. Of course, they did it in the middle of the night. The crew would climb out of the mother submarine, would climb up the side of this submarine with a temporary ladder they would hook to the side, would climb in, and then the mother submarine would submerge underneath it. And then it would be off. It had an endurance of about a day. Incredible technology. We did not anticipate that the Japanese had built these things. They were capable of very high-speed sprints, which for a period of an hour, or long, slow-speed, long-duration missions. We didn't have anything like this in our inventory. And the existence of these submarines absolutely it was surprised the United States when they first discovered the ones that were involved in the attack on Pearl Harbor. One thing that people don't really get a sense for until they come and visit is the size of the submarine. Look down the length of the submarine here. It's huge. You know, we call it a midget submarine, but it was really big. And it had two full-size torpedoes in it. These were Mark 97 torpedoes. They were extremely powerful torpedoes. They carried each about a 1,000-pound explosive warhead. that was more than twice the size of the torpedoes that were airdropped by the aircraft that were involved, the torpedo bombers that were involved in the attack on Pearl Harbor. So these torpedoes carried at least twice the explosive power of the torpedoes that the air torpedo bombers came in and were used at Pearl Harbor. So some people speculate, because there's one particular explosion, the explosion that took place against the USS Oklahoma, that was much larger than the other torpedo explosions that you could see from photographs and films of the attack, that at least one midget submarine launched a torpedo inside Pearl Harbor, and that was, you know, the Mark 97, and that's what sunk the Oklahoma. Still unproven, but there's a lot of people who do believe that. We do know that at least one submarine got into Pearl Harbor because it was recovered in Pearl Harbor on the west side of Ford Island. That submarine was commanded by a lieutenant, not an ensign like the rest of them, because that lieutenant was actually an instructor for midget submarine operations, and he absolutely got in. He was killed when that midget submarine was attacked inside the harbor, and it sunk. His body was later recovered, and in fact, that submarine is buried at submarine base on Pearl Harbor. When they were doing the landfill, they just dropped the submarine into the landfill, and it's still there to this day. But we know that at least one submarine got into Pearl Harbor. We don't know for sure whether another one did, and we don't know if any of the submarines actually successfully launched torpedoes against any of the ships that were there in Pearl Harbor that day. Now you see how long the submarine is. It's long and it's big. And when you're trying to maneuver something that's that long and that big, you need a rudder with enough force to allow it to turn what we call a tactically significant radius, turning radius. And because the submarine is so big, it really needs a big rudder to give it the impulse necessary to kick the stern around and get it turning. Unfortunately, these submarines were built with a rudder that's just that big, a little longer than my hand. I don't know if you can see that, but it's a little longer than my hand. That's up on top, and it's at the bottom. But that rudder was way too small to allow these submarines to maneuver sufficiently to get around obstacles, to get through the channel in Pearl Harbor. It's a long channel, actually, to get to the area where the ships were. In Pearl Harbor, you have to go past Hickam, you go past the shipyard. It's a long way in there. And the problem was that the rudder was designed poorly. And so the crew had a great deal of difficulty maneuvering into places where they could place a torpedo. So, for example, once they got into the harbor by itself, in order to pivot the ship to point it towards Ford Island and get to firing position, they required a very large turning radius. And there wasn't a lot of water there for them to turn in. So they would probably have had to back up, turn, to get the nose pointed at the ships that they were targeting. It was a wonderfully brilliant design in almost every aspect, but it was a very poor design when it came to rudder. A lot of these crews complained that the ships just weren't maneuverable enough to do what they were supposed to do. A few months after Pearl Harbor, the rudder was designed, it was made much bigger so that the ship could turn in a much tighter diameter. It's good news for the Americans, I think, though, that the rudder was so poorly designed, because it made these midgets much less effective than they would have been during the attack on Pearl Harbor. Okay, one of the technological advances of this submarine design is, like a torpedo, they built it with counter-rotating propellers, or counter-rotating props. So one of the props would turn clockwise, the other prop would turn counterclockwise. And what this did was it eliminated the torque that would be caused by just a single screw. And so if it had just a single screw, it would tend to turn to starboard while you're trying to keep it straight. So you would always have to keep port rudder on to go straight. By building a design that had counter-rotating props like this, they didn't have to worry about that. They could drive straight. It did a wonderful job driving straight, but because of the small rudder, the only problem it had was when they wanted to turn. So the whole point of a submarine is to stay submerged and stay out of sight until something explodes, right? You stay submerged, you stay hidden, stealthy, conduct your attack, and the first time the enemy knows that you're there is when something blows up. That's the point of a submarine. In order to stay submerged, you need planes to keep the submarine at the depth you want it to. And like most submarines, these midgets were built with stern planes. So here's a stern plane on this midget submarine that was probably reasonably designed. The stern planes actually would adjust the angle of the submarine up or down to drive up or drive down, because it lifts the stern or it pushes the stern down. So the submarine could drive up and down really well. But what if you're trying to stay at periscope depth? You're not trying to change the angle of the ship. You just need slight forces to kind of push you down, pull you up. Those planes on every other design of submarine are placed either on the sail of the submarine, way up there, or all the way on the bow. So it's a separate set of planes that's used just as a dynamic force to keep the trim of the submarine right so you can hold depth better. You notice this submarine doesn't have bow planes or sail planes. It only has stern planes. And what that meant was it was really good at driving up from a deeper depth to driving down to a deeper depth, but when they wanted to stay at periscope depth, keeping just their periscope exposed so they could target a ship, there was nothing that allowed them to do that. The only choice they had was to change the angle of the ship. And if they change the angle up, they're shallow, and they change the angle up to come a little shallower, the bow gets exposed. It actually sticks out of the water. Or if they change the angle down to get a little deeper because they're losing depth control and coming up, the stern gets exposed. The screw actually reaches the surface of the water, and you see this big, you know, turbulence caused by the screws turning. So this is the second way. This is not a very good design. The first way was the rudder was too small. The second way was they had a very difficult time keeping depth at periscope depth, which was the attack depth. And because of that, they often broached, and they were seen all too often. In fact, the other submarine that I mentioned that was destroyed with inside Pearl Harbor, I think it was launched off the I-16. It was broached when it was seen, and that's how they knew it was there. And they were trying desperately to get back down and churning up water like crazy with the screw, trying to put a down angle on the submarine, trying to get back down. But they were up shallow and long enough for a destroyer to fire its gun at the submarine and penetrate the hull near the sail. And that's how they were sunk. But again, good for the United States, bad for the crews of the midget submarines, that the only way they could change depth was by means of the stern planes, that they hadn't designed reasonable bow planes or sail planes that would allow them more refined depth control. Now the periscope, of course, would have stuck out of the top of the sail here. The skipper of the midget submarine would have been kind of in that, in a little trunk area there with the periscope up, and he's the only one who would see out of the submarine. And of course, that's only when the periscope was raised. The crew member was a bit forward of the sail down here in this area, and he's driving based on orders that the skipper is giving him. He's got the rudder control, he's got the stern planes control, and he's got the propeller control, and that's all he has to steer the submarine, and he's just doing what the skipper's telling him. The only way the skipper knows what to tell him is by looking out of the periscope. Now, this particular submarine, the one that was launched from I-24, had a gyroscope problem. So even before they launched off the I-24, the skipper of this submarine knew that their gyroscope wasn't working right. They tried to fix it. He thought he had it fixed. They had to make a go, no-go decision as to whether to launch. And they launched. It's unknown whether those gyro problems contributed to the fact that he ended up on the east side of Oahu and then later grounded instead of going up the channel the way he should have. While they're deep, the only device they have to tell them which way to go is in fact the gyro. So it's logical that right after launch they went deep, they were following their gyro heading. The gyro heading was wrong, ended up in the wrong direction. They came shallow, looked for Pearl Harbor through the periscope, couldn't see it, got disoriented, didn't know where they were, started driving into what they thought was Pearl Harbor based on lights, and actually it wasn't, and ran aground that way. That's the only theory that makes sense to me as a submariner. Ensign Sakamaki here is the one who was the pilot or skipper of this midget submarine, generally regarded, and the name would be I-24 Toll because it was launched from the I-24 full-size submarine. But he was the first prisoner of war during World War II for the Americans because he was captured immediately after I-24 Toll was grounded. And this is the picture that was taken of the submarine a short while after it grounded. See Rabbit Island in the background here. This was at Bellows Beach on Oahu, on the east coast of Oahu. Still, nobody really understands how Ensign Sakamaki got from the southern side of Oahu, which is where the attack, he was supposed to enter Pearl Harbor, around to the eastern side, which is where Bellows was and where he grounded. He said he fell asleep and they drifted there, but nobody really knows. So this is a photograph that was taken of Pearl Harbor and Ford Island, October 1941, so let's say 2 months or so before the attack on Pearl Harbor. You do see some battleships tied up here. This would be the east side of Ford Island. North would be down. But you see some battleships tied up here. And I mentioned before that one of the midget submarines was sunk inside Pearl Harbor. That happened on the west side, around here. There were some ships that were in the harbor that fired on it, and it was sunk and recovered right up there on the west side of Ford Island. The theoretical attack on the Oklahoma would have been on this side here. It would have been up in that area of Ford Island, and if it happened, the midget would have fired from right over here. Submarine base is over there, and this is the Navy supply piers, and then on that side where the destroyer piers and the Pearl Harbor Naval Shipyard up top, and the midget submarine, if it fired, that torpedo would have been right over there somewhere, firing into the battleships in that direction. This was Admiral Kimmel, who was commander of the Pacific Fleet when Pearl Harbor attack came. Later, not treated very well. He was relieved for cause right after the Pearl Harbor attack because the theory was that he hadn't prepared for the attack very well. I think the facts speak for themselves. But he watched the attack from an office that's now the submarine base, Pearl Harbor, that actually was my office when I was Commodore of Submarine Squadron 3. It was Kimmel's office in December 1941. And the famous incident occurred while he was in that office watching the attack unfold. A bullet came through the window and hit him in the chest. He had a metal cigarette case in his chest pocket in his uniform. Hit him in his chest and the bullet fell onto the ground. And he famously said, it would have been better if it had killed me. Now, for years, people speculated that bullet was from a Japanese airplane. But one of my physics projects when I was at the academy was to demonstrate that if that had been a Japanese bullet fired from a fighter or something like that, a strafing fighter, then that would have killed him. It would have got through his metal cigarette case, but I was able to show, as had many people before me, that through ballistics analysis, through, you know, it was mechanics, the science of mechanics, that bullet was actually a bullet that had been fired up and then was falling back to Earth by means of gravity. And so it was an American bullet that had hit him, not a Japanese bullet. And that hole in the window in that office was there until, sadly, right before I became Commodore, when somebody had the great idea to fix this window with a hole in it, who didn't understand the history, the historic value of that window. And they replaced the window. And when I relieved this Commodore and I went in to see the hole in the window, I was horrified to see that somebody had replaced it. So we got the office, while I was Commodore, I got the office declared listed on the National List of Historic Landmarks, so nobody will mess with it again. So I mentioned a while ago that there's a theory that it was a midget submarine torpedo that sunk the Oklahoma. That theory is based on the fact that the explosion and the water plume from the torpedo that hit the Oklahoma was twice the size of water plumes from other ship, or other torpedoes that hit other ships. Also, the Oklahoma capsized almost immediately. And this is it here, a photo after capsized, trapping over 400 men. They were able to cut holes in the hull to get some of the men out, but not all of them, unfortunately. But this shows a photograph of the Oklahoma after it capsized. That's the bottom sitting. As the ship rolled over, you can see the bottom exposed, Ford Islands in the background. And so if a midget submarine did shoot a torpedo into the Oklahoma, it would have done it from this direction going in like this.